Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are just 152 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's July and it's fucking hot outside.
Amen to that.
Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I am your host for this episode of Christmas Creeps and every episode of Christmas Creeps. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Yeah.
And the newly minted Karen Five, the, what did we say, the trapdoor spider? Last
really?
Time? Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know, but I did swap some of my human parts out for robot parts.
Like in Superman 2 or 3?
I'm like a cyborg now?
Yeah, one of those comics where Steel became like the fake Superman.
No, I was thinking about that fucked up scene in one of the Supermans where like the woman like gets thrown into a robot machine, turned into a robot.
I do not remember that one.
Are you sure you're not thinking of just like Pinbot?
No, I could be thinking of System Shock though. I don't know.
It sounds like System Shock to me.
I swear. I'm going to look this up on the internet machine here.
But tonight on the podcast, current events being what they are, we magically found ourselves in possession of a Paul Feig movie to review tonight. Because his latest movie, Ghostbusters, is out in theaters now, and we've seen it, and we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. But for the most part, we're going to be talking about his 2006... film Unaccompanied Minors, and I know you're so excited to hear what we have to say.
His 2006 magnum opus.
Yes, 2006 was a fantastic year.
I was 20 years old that year.
I was 2 years into college and loving it.
I was dropped out of college once, and I think maybe in it for a second time.
And John Silence speaks volumes.
This is the episode where John isn't going to speak on the podcast.
I'll go into the room and play video games. You guys don't need me.
He's in character right now. That's fine.
Can we all just like podcast while video gaming?
Yeah, can we all just go into the other room and play video games?
I've got my computer right here. I can just like fucking pull up Steam.
You can just fire up some Binding of Isaac and we'll be off to the races.
Oh man, someone bring me an Xbox controller.
But no, we are here tonight to talk about movies, guys.
Okay.
Keeping you two on topic is like hurting cats, which is odd because there are actual cats in the room right now.
Yes, we also have two cats.
And one of them staring at me like I just insulted its mother. Yeah, that's right.
That's its mother right there. Oh. Johnny Five.
Oh, so I did. There he goes. Oh, man. Yeah, Ghostbusters is out now, and we've mentioned it before on the podcast. We picked apart the trailers in minute detail.
That's right.
It's like 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, it has been a little while.
But we've seen the movie now, and we're here to give you the hot takes with Johnny Five's cat. Beautiful.
She looked so angry that you were holding her, by the way. We have one cat who is a lap cat and a huge baby and loves to be cuddled. And we have another cat that's an actual cat. She's very particular. She doesn't like to be picked up.
Not a bit.
Oh, so this is like Bad Santa 2?
Basically.
This, more or less. But before we get into Unaccompanied Minors, do we want to have like a final word on Ghostbusters?
It was fun.
Primarily that we all surprisingly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was not as good as the original Ghostbusters.
It was never going to be.
No, it never did. It was better than Ghostbusters 2. I was going to say, you know, one thing I liked about the original Ghostbusters was the straight man was the entire world versus the Ghostbusters, pretty much. That was the straight man.
Yeah.
The straight man in this one was Kristen Wiig, and she looked really, like, not too happy to be there. So at times.
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling that she was really bummed out that she couldn't also be the wacky one with everybody else.
I thought her whole character though was just someone who was kind of like super uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah, and when everyone else is wackying it the fuck up, it's like you don't want to be Zeppo is the problem. No one wants to be not Zeppo didn't want to be Zeppo.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And
everyone wants to be Chico. Right?
Yeah, and I mean it's I just want to say this movie suffered from not being written by the same people who wrote Ghostbusters, but not even Ghostbusters 2 was written by the same people who wrote Ghostbusters.
Right. So, I mean, it's a very specific paradigm that they're trying to, like, capture, but I don't even think... They're not really even being they're not even trying to be the same thing. Like, they're two very different kinds of Ghostbusters movies.
Yeah, this one, like, they never actually caught a ghost. They just beat the shit out of a bunch of ghosts, which was, it's whatever. It's
yeah.
Just, I noticed that they didn't actually bother figuring out a way to, like, actually trap the ghost. Like, what?
No, they did. They caught a demon.
But yeah, they didn't.
They didn't do anything. They didn't.
Let it go.
They didn't put it anywhere.
Yeah, they didn't figure out how to contain the demon until, like, the post-credit scene, pretty much, where she's like, oh, I invented a way to do this during the credits.
Right.
And
like, for as much of the movie as is, like, fascinated by, like, just watching them build their tech and do their thing, like, that seemed like a weird afterthought. Like, they should have just had a scene where they said, oh, this is how you do it. All right. Click.
Yeah. Thump.
But, you know.
I guess they were like, you know, we got four of these traps. We can catch four ghosts.
We got four of these traps. We can catch, like, what, like, nine ghosts? And
I wonder if they can just keep stuffing them in there.
Ghostbusters didn't really feel the need to, like, oh, now it's time for an action movie. This one did. The last 30 minutes or so.
Yeah. It got real action heavy toward the end.
Yeah. And, like, there were, like, legitimate fight scenes and chase scenes and all kinds of weird stuff going on.
And this might be a spoiler, but I do want to point it out. We both watched the Red Letter Media video on it.
Yeah.
And they point out something that's worth mentioning, not to just repeat what they said, but I do have to do it. They said there has to be some kind of symbolism in the fact that the movie ended with them shooting the Ghostbusters logo in the dick.
Oh, there totally was.
Yeah.
I don't think you can ignore that.
Like, the way they said this is a movie that really, really hated the people who made this movie really hated the fans of the movie.
Maybe to an extent. Like, the villain is very much, like, in the mode of, I hate to say, the kind of people that, like, lashed out against the film from day one.
Yeah.
Which...
Well, and the whole nod that they gave when they were reading, like, YouTube comments or whatever, you know.
Yeah, at first I felt that was the only nod they had to, like, the controversy was just they were reading YouTube comments and they read a comment that just said, ain't no bitch is gonna bust ghosts or something like that.
Yeah.
And if that was all it was, that's a funny little nod, but, like, when you start working it into your movie and it's like, are you, like, do you want to stop making this movie for a minute and grind that axe a little, or?
Yeah, it's a little, it has kind of a, I don't want to say the word, I don't want to say the word agenda, but, I mean, it does have an axe to grind, you're right.
That darn feminist agenda.
It's kind of like how Gremlins 2, more than anything else, was Joe Dante didn't want to make Gremlins 2, so he was just going to do whatever the fuck he wanted.
Right, and it turned out a better movie for it. Hey, everybody, it's your movie pal Joe here. Real quick, just wanted to let you know that at this point in the podcast, as soon as we started talking about Gremlins, our computer completely chewed up the podcast feed for about 5 minutes or so, and it's mostly unsalvageable. So I'm just going to mention real quick kind of what you missed so you don't feel like you're too lost when we dive right back into the middle of Unaccompanied Minors. So basically, the Ghostbusters movie, it's great. It's a lot of fun. You should go see it if you haven't. If you think you might like it, definitely check it out. It's worth seeing. We do talk about how, you know, kind of unlike a lot of common remakes nowadays, like RoboCop and Total Recall, the people that made this movie realized that they're actually making a comedy, and they decided to put jokes in it. So whereas the original Ghostbusters is kind of a horror movie with three jokey guys in it, the new Ghostbusters is top to bottom very much a comedy, and that works so much better in terms of, you know, a 2016 update of Ghostbusters. Your mileage may vary, but, you know, at least they didn't completely fuck it up and try to make a gritty Batman-esque reboot of Ghostbusters, like everyone, I think, was probably hoping they might. I don't know, but, you know, it's good stuff. And then as far as Unaccompanied Minors goes, really all you need to know about this movie is that it's about a bunch of kids trapped in an airport overnight on Christmas Eve because of snow problems and family problems. None of their families are there to come claim them. And they can't leave the airport because Lewis Black is an asshole. And so that's about where we left off. So I'm going to let you just jump right back in, and hopefully it won't be too confusing.
The cat
is just staring at him like, what?
And he does crane style, and the cat runs off, and he's like, you are a worthy opponent.
Yeah. And we decided we had seen a commercial for some movie with Kevin Spacey in it earlier.
Yeah, that was Kevin
Nine
Spacey.
Nine Lives with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, where he's a cat. So we decided that he was challenging Kevin Spacey.
There's a movie in my future.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Joe.
Yeah,
it's the life of a movie critic.
Well, this is the life I've chosen.
So the other four kids end up in, like, the lost luggage room and just start going through 50 years worth of shit. And yeah. just like the everyone hates Chris kid because he is the kind of kid who's like he's the theater kid basically.
Yeah, he's like yeah, you're academically gifted.
Well, no, I'm talking yeah. about the actual the actor. He is he is the theater kid. So he's like picking up like a Charlie Chaplin hat and cane type shit and like dancing around. And
he hits himself in the face.
Hits himself in the face. And then Donna finds nunchucks and hits herself in the face.
And then Spencer...
He hit himself, like, in the throat. He, like, crushed his windpipe.
And then Spencer finds a guitar, and he's, like, miming it around. And I was expecting him to hit himself in the face with it.
I was
and
waiting for that.
And then the rich girl is, like, digging through, like, 40-year-old underwear in a suitcase. Like
she found, like a Louis Vuitton suitcase or something. So yeah, she was like, this is going to be good clothes.
Yeah, she's digging through it. And, like, she keeps holding, like, up underwear and going, ew, ew, like... 5 or 6 times the same joke.
Well, I mean, presumably this underwear has been worn and not washed in 50 years.
Well, it's like she found a suitcase of nothing but like she found the suitcase from Big Lebowski.
She found Walter's suitcase.
His undies, his dirty undies.
He would like his undies back.
This was decidedly a woman's suitcase. It was like women's clothes.
Don't judge Walter.
You don't know what he does at home with that Pomeranian.
Oh God. I don't want to know now.
So basically they end up with, they get some like walkie-talkies that have like video playback on them or something.
Did not exist in 2006.
They get like space walkie-talkie MacGuffins and also a doll for the sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the actual like mission of the movie is these 5 kids need to get back to the hotel where Spencer's sister is being kidnapped and held captive because she still believes in Santa and he wants to have a present for her from Santa before, you know,
right. on 6 a.m. on Christmas Day.
So that's the actual plot of the movie.
Yeah. But then while they're in there, they have a dance number and like the rich girl and Everybody Hates Chris start dancing. And then Donna's like, yo, bitch, get away from my man. So she cuts in and then the other two start dancing. And then the entire time they've been on security cameras, but Rob Riggle has just not been paying attention. He's been playing with a slinky, not joking.
Yeah.
So they finally notice and they all run in there.
Well, before they notice it, what they actually notice is Everybody Hates Chris just dancing by himself.
Yeah.
It's just a montage of him dancing by himself. And it's one of those scenes that, like I mentioned before, where Paul Feig just said, just put an actor in front of the camera. Just do something.
Right.
And he's like, all right, I guess I'll dance. And he's just dancing. And he's not a bad dancer. He's like almost doing like Bill Cosby stuff for like the herky jerky. But then he's like getting into it. But it's like 3 minutes long.
Yeah. You get the feeling that Paul Feig was just like, lights, camera, be funny.
Yeah. That's kind of what he does. That's what he does. Like Ghostbusters did that a lot. A lot of his movies do that.
Okay.
That's my one critique of his. It's not necessarily
a bad thing. It's just you have to have people who are funny doing that.
Yeah, like if you're gonna have your actors improv and then commit to it and keep it in the movie, you have to. It has to be funny.
Like, there is a reason that Anchorman had like what like 12 or 13 hours worth of footage.
Yeah,
because the rest of it was all bad.
Yeah, like they had so much footage for Anchorman, they cut together a second movie. And that second movie's garbage.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That whole movie, it's about, like, a gang run by Chuck D that kidnaps Ron Burgundy and, like, threatens to, like... Or, like, what their plan is something to do with, like, getting him to put them on TV so that they can, like, spout, you know, racial justice, which is, you know, fine, but, like, it's not funny.
Oh my God.
It's not the plot of a movie. It's just a bunch of shit that they're doing. And
yeah, like
I don't know why Chuck D agreed to do it.
Yeah, like I read on IMDb that like the first cut of this new Ghostbusters was 4.5 hours.
Yeah,
and you realize that it was just like another like what like 2 hours and 45 minutes of just improv that didn't work.
Just vamping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's literally a scene in the new Ghostbusters where Melissa McCarthy has to explain like why life is worth living, and she goes, and like you don't know if it's improv or not,
mm-hmm.
or you don't know if that's like that's what she thought the joke was,
right?
Or if they just said like, okay, let's just move on.
Yeah,
yeah. Especially between Wig and McCarthy, there's lots of moments of just like one of them says a joke and then they just do that like celebrity druthers fast talking thing back and forth to each other as like a second, third, and fourth punchline.
Yeah,
and it's not too bad, but like it's like please do other jokes. Don't just do that.
Oh, your punchline. Oh, my punchline.
Yeah.
No, your punchline.
Yeah, punchline. Oh, other punchline. Punchline.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Okay. All right. We're good.
That was funny.
Damn. Fucking throwing shit over here.
So back to Unaccompanied Minors.
this movie we're watching, what happened? Okay, so they're running from the guards and they find a canoe and decide to go bobsledding with
Wilmer Valderrama.
Wilmer, yes, they go with Wilmer.
The former Mr. Lindsay Lohan.
Well, that's right. I forgot about that.
Didn't he also bang Mila Kunis, or was it only on the show?
Probably.
Which, it was definitely on the show.
Probably both.
Okay. So they go, like, bobsledding down the Great Wolf Lodge, and then all the guards chase them on, like, tires and mattresses and shit, and they all, like, manage to kill themselves, basically.
Yeah, except for Rob Riggle, who, like, falls into a Rob Riggle-shaped hole in the snow.
And Lewis Black, who...
He just flies off into the night. Yeah. He gets eaten by a Gru.
Yeah.
Because, like...
That was bizarre.
The kids in their canoe, they manage to, like, actually slow it down and stop in front of the hotel, and then Lewis Black just flies off a snowbank and into the night, never to be seen again, except you see him again two minutes later.
You see him again.
So, yeah, so then they run around the hotel a bunch and cause mayhem just to get away from Lewis Black and give the sleeping sister the doll. But then, like, Lewis Black captures them and takes them back to the airport, which makes no fucking sense because, like, he should be like, fine, stay at the fucking hotel then, whatever, and just leave. Like, yeah. There's no reason for him to take the kids back to the airport because the kids are where all the other kids are now.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically doing it because it's his job and because movie.
I kind of wanted, like, Beef Wellington to show up at the end of this movie with the police who are like, yeah, we had some reports of kidnapping.
I mean, after he leaves and says that he's going to go get a Christmas tree, I was just waiting for that scene where he, like, crashes through a giant window with a Christmas tree on a forklift or something.
Because even the kids are like, we're not going to see him again, are we? No, never.
No, like, even they know. Even they know that he's useless and he's gone. But, yeah, so Lewis Black catches them and puts them in solitary confinement, which is just, like, the little interrogation rooms that you would see in a police station. In the airport.
And they have, like, this weird, like, fucking, like, propaganda artwork on the, like, posters on the walls.
Yeah, what did it say? It was like...
One of them said, society is not to blame, you are.
Yeah. That's the best. Society is not to blame, children are.
But it's kind of fantastic.
They all have these, like, video walkie-talkies, so they all, like, literally do the thing from Speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they hide the walkie-talkie up in the corner, record some video of them walking around, and, like, hold it in front of the camera so it loops... Well, they, like, go Metal Gear Solid through the ventilation shaft.
And it works perfectly.
And then...
Which I'm willing to accept, because whatever.
Right.
And then Charlie farts in Donna's face, and then they fall through the ceiling.
Into the storage room full of Christmas decorations. Really? Because the thing that we have not mentioned before yet in this movie, which the movie only mentions once...
Yeah.
Is the fact that the chief of the airport, Lewis Black, hates Christmas, and he only wants... He will only allow them to put up the most minimal Christmas decorations imaginable, as evinced by a green triangle that symbolizes a Christmas tree and three red dots, which symbolizes the predator. I mean, which symbolizes like holly berries or something. And that's Christmas in the airport.
Okay.
This is so weird.
Skip ahead. So I'm just now like letting the fact that the end of the movie ended up with Lewis Black, a Jewish guy dressed like Santa, sink in.
Well.
On the other hand, Lewis Black likes big bags of money, so...
Yeah, and what is Christmas if not a big bag of money?
Yeah, I'm not faulting him for it. I'm just saying it makes sense if you just realize...
What's in Santa's magical sack?
Money? Yeah. What do you think he fucking makes it? He goes and buys everything off of Amazon and gets, like, two-day shipping.
I figured it was just testicles.
No. Santa is not Boba Fett. He does not collect Wookiee testicles.
God damn it, Jonathan.
Can I ask one question?
Joe's about to die.
Can I ask you one question, John?
About the thing you just said. I ask you one question?
Other than the question you're asking right now?
Yes.
No.
Please?
Okay.
How do you know? How do you know this about Boba Fett?
It was in the novelization.
Oh, okay. You know they threw all of that shit out the window, right? That's gone. It's out of there. It's out of here. Bye-bye, EU.
Well...
George Lucas caught it all in his neck waddle, so it's safe.
John has some Wookiee blood in him, so he knows some guys.
Oh, God. Can I just... a slight digression here. Can I just say, Disney recently announced that Grand Admiral Thrawn is coming back into the Star Wars universe.
I don't know who that is.
He was a villain in the books.
Okay, okay.
But I love it because it just means they made this big show of throwing out all of the books and all of the expanded universe stuff and saying it no longer exists.
Now
it's
they're
not
just
canon.
Now they're just digging through. Right. Like, what Kleenex isn't too?
And now they're just digging through the trash, saying, "Well, what did we just pull out? What did we just throw away? Let's pull some of this out and put it back in."
Darksaber, what's this about? I don't know.
They're like, we'll just add it in as, you know, like it's new.
Yeah. That's no one will ever know the difference.
Yeah, it's like they just went up to Timothy Zahn and Kevin J. Anderson with like big like trucks full of money and just be like, "We're sorry, please."
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Kevin J. Anderson's just like, "No, I'm ruining Star Trek now."
I've moved on.
I don't know what he's ruining now, but
yeah, I don't know.
He does ruin things.
Interesting thing about there is a Star Wars reference in this movie. There's a really weird Star Wars reference.
There's two actually. There's one when he's swinging around the cane. He's making lightsaber noises.
Yeah, there's one where Everybody Hates Chris is playing Star Wars Kid.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And he's not making the noise. It just plays the noises.
Yeah, they're just playing it. He's just swinging it around. And then the second reference is
when Bran
and Star Wars Kid and
Star Wars Kid.
Charlie and Donna. They're running. They're like, "Wait, I have an idea. Do you see Star Wars?"
Yeah.
And she's like,
"Yeah." They run one way down a hallway. They're knocking on all the doors to wake everybody up in the hotel to like get them pissed off at Lewis Black.
Yeah, and they run up like the stairwell.
And they're like, "Wait a minute!" And then which one says it?
Charlie, because he's the nerd and he knows Star Wars.
Oh, because Dork, yeah. So they turn around and they start screaming and they're pulling the Han Solo in the Death Star.
Yeah, because an 11-year-old girl who likes action and kung fu shit's not gonna know what the hell Star Wars is.
Right. Yeah, because she's basically like a girl like Meathead. He's a nerd and she's a fucking jock.
They're both 11 years old in 2006. They saw Revenge of the Sith. Don't lie to me.
Oh god.
It's true.
No, thank you.
But yeah, like they run past him screaming, like miming that they're holding blasters even.
Yeah.
And Lewis Black's just like, "God damn it, not Star Wars."
Yeah.
Like he recognizes it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he knows what's going on, which is wonderful. But then he gets punched in the face by like
Thor's dad,
Grandpa Thor. Yeah,
Thor's real dad, not Odin.
Yeah not Odin. So while all this stuff is happening, there's a subplot involving Rob Corddry, formerly of The Daily Show.
There's a lot of random ass people. Like you're like how did Paul Feige show up with this movie for 5 seconds? Like you'd think if he got you in this movie, you'd be in here for longer. Like Mindy Kaling is in there for. As a waitress for like 2 seconds.
And DJ Novak's in the movie.
Yeah, it's like the help desk.
David Kichter's in the movie.
Yeah, David Kichter's in a flashback. He's the Rimmerman's dad, I think.
He's the Rimmerman's
his like hard ass like dad.
Yeah. Half the kids in the hall are in this movie as like security guards.
Yeah, 60% of them.
Yeah.
The ones who aren't are Scott Thompson and Dave Foley. I guess because they couldn't find which gutter Dave Foley was in this week.
I think this was about the time when Dave Foley was working in Uwe Boll movies. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a gutter you don't want him to go looking for.
Let him crawl out of that one on his own. But, so Rob Corddry plays Spencer's dad, his not a strange dad, but like Spencer's parents aren't together anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, because one of them lives in Pennsylvania, the other one lives in wherever the fuck.
California.
Yeah, they're in like California.
Yeah, and so his mom, who's Paget Brewster, and his grandma, who is, I forget the actress's name, but she plays Cousin Eddie's wife from the Vacation movies. Like, they're freaking out because, oh no, the kids are trapped at the airport.
We left Kevin home alone.
We left Kevin at the airport.
He's only 23.
And
we played that on the Home Alone 5 episode, right?
Yeah, we did that.
Okay, good, good, good. Otherwise, we got to invent a time machine.
So she has to like suck up her pride and call the kid's dad and say, "Hey, can you pick them up because you live closer?" And he's like, "All right." But we find out that the reason they split up probably is that he's like a super, super crunchy motherfucker.
Yeah, he is.
And he drives a car that runs on vegetable oil.
Yeah.
And that gets like, that goes,
oh, dear Lord,
10 miles an
Mario
hour.
Lopez was in this movie too. What
Mario
the hell?
Mario Lopez was?
He was one of the guys in the Unaccompanied Minors Room who ran out when Fez came in.
What the fuck? There must have just been, like, they were filming... They filmed this in Utah. I saw it when it was...
Yeah, because, like, Kristen Wiig is in this for, like...
Everyone must have just been, like, hanging out around there. They like, hear that, like, oh, Mario Lopez is here. It's like, hey, let's get him on the set for, like, some shit. Like...
The fact that there's so many people are in this movie is just kind of a testament to the fact that Paul Feig has, like, lots of friends in Hollywood. Like he at this point he had been a big TV guy. Like he did Freaks and Geeks. He did
Shit, I love Freaks.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the list of like just random people in this movie now. Like, yeah, Jessica Walter, Rob Riggle, David Koechner, BJ Novak, Mindy Kaling, Kevin McDonald, Bruce McCulloch, whose like IMDb photo is him dressed as a woman from Kids in the Hall. They didn't even get a current picture of him. Mark McKinney, Dave Allen, Tony Hale, Cedric Yarborough, Kristen Wiig. We didn't even see Kristen Wiig, and she's apparently in this movie.
Yeah, she wasn't really.
She's Donna's mom.
But yeah, we but we didn't see. Her. I don't remember seeing her though.
Well, we did. We were just I think paying
she
good
was,
attention.
I think she was at the beginning of the movie, and that was when we were not paying attention.
Yeah, because she was telling her to go sit on Santa's lap.
Yeah,
okay.
But
okay.
I wasn't paying very good attention. I didn't even look at her, so I didn't realize it was her.
Yeah. So Paul Feig has been a director on Freaks and Geeks, Undeclared, Arrested Development, 30 Rock, Mad Men, Weeds. He's all over the place. So the fact that he's got like famous comedian friends all over is kind of no surprise.
But I'm more surprised that he got them to like show up for like one line and that's it. Like, yeah, hey guys, come out to Utah and do like 3 minutes in my movie.
Right.
3 minutes filming, that is. You're not going to be in the movie for 3 minutes.
I was going to say, maybe they were just already like chilling there.
They like, could have been. Like, hey,
been, like,
hey,
on fucking vacation okay. or something. Was
it, I'm on my first movie. Come hang out.
Was it Terry Garr who was the... Because Terry Garr is credited as Valerie's sister, or not credited as it actually.
Terry, I don't. Hang on a minute.
Oh, I also confirmed that Wilmer Valderrama,
Valerie's sister, is who she listed as,
and Mila Kunis did in fact date.
Okay.
We're frantically wow.
Yeah, and all of the Kids in the Hall guys are credited as Guard in the Hall.
Of course, naturally. Their like two scenes are pretty good. Like, they're supposed to be guarding the kids, and instead they're just like playing musical chairs
and arguing about the rules to musical chairs.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's like it doesn't add or take anything from the movie if that scene's in there or not.
But it's fun that it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
I kind of liked some of the adults just like chilling scenes because it was just like stupid comedy.
Yeah.
The kid stuff was like just hard to watch after a while.
Yeah, like Rob
it's because we're not the like target age for
this. We're not 14 anymore, sadly. Yeah.
Like Rob Corddry's biodiesel piece of shit Volkswagen or whatever, like it breaks down and explodes.
Right.
And so he has to get like Mr. Russo to help him. Was it Russo or Rosso? Dave Allen.
Mr.
Dave
Rosso. Allen.
Yeah, Mr. Rosso.
Yeah, he gets him to help him and he's like, you know, well, I can get your car in the morning or you can borrow the mayor's Humvee. And he has a moral dilemma about that. And he makes a joke about when he's driving that he had to fill up 5 times on like the 2-hour drive from the airport already. Mm-hmm. Or to the airport.
And then at the end of the movie, he makes a joke that he's out of money because he maxed out his credit card filling up the car with gas. Which, if you'll remember, in 2006, the average price of a gallon of gas was like $4.
Yeah.
So that's a timely political reference.
Yeah, it was a nice aging of the movie there, yeah. Dating it.
Yeah, and anyway, so they Lewis Black drags them back. Yeah, so they get in the Christmas room and they decide to like let's decorate the entire hotel,
airport.
Yes, they decorate the entire airport,
like okay. Elf style.
Yes. And then they run around ringing bells and annoying everyone, and Thurman Merman shows up again with the Christmas tree, so they decorate that. And they get Fez to help them. Like, he gets them a list of, like, all of the people traveling alone and all of the children in the airport.
Right.
And then, like, Lewis Black and Jesse Eisenberg Jr. have, like, a heart-to-heart about, like, he's like, you know, why are you so miserable about Christmas? And Lewis Black's like, I worked the last 5 Christmases. He's like, why don't you go home for Christmas? And he's like, my wife left me 5 Christmases ago. That kind of, because all on top of that, like all of the kids are divorced kids except for the rich girl whose parents just like sent her to boarding school and go to Paris for a year pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just ignore her.
So Lewis Black shows up playing Santa, like I said before, and gives out presents. He gives Buster Bluth a basketball.
Yeah, that's right. He was in it too. Yeah, yeah. Buster Bluth.
Tony Hale's like, they're calling out all the kids, and they call Tony Hale's character, and he's like, I'm not a kid. I'm like 36.
Yeah.
Like, but you're alone on Christmas. He's like, oh, yeah, that's right.
So you're on Christmas. Here's basketball. He's like, basketball? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And as I said,
everybody gets to be a kid at Christmas.
His mother was there. She's the head flight attendant.
She was there getting shit-faced drunk.
As usual.
No. Santa's my new mother.
My awards from Christmas.
Oh boy, we've all seen Arrested Development.
Oh boy,
yes we have.
So then, yeah, then the movie ends with like, everyone hates Chris and
Donna.
Bran, like 11-year-old make out, which means they kiss once and then like gasp about it pretty much. And then they exchange phone numbers and then. Yeah. Thurman Merman like starts macking on some like 12-year-old girl.
No,
like,
some random girl just walks up to him.
Oh,
yeah.
She starts macking on him, and he's like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, she walks up to him, and
she's
he's
"Yeah, want some beef Wellington, baby?"
Pretty much.
And then Spencer and Grace, he invites her home for Christmas,
and she's like, "Took you fucking long enough, dipshit."
Pretty much,
which is super forward, and that's gonna be awkward. That's gonna be really weird.
Yeah, I just like. I was talking about like Unaccompanied Minors 2, like where it's like 3 years later and they're all in Hawaii with Louis Black. He's like, "Oh no, it's these kids again." They're like, "No, we're 15 now. We're just gonna go fuck in the closet, Louis Black."
Yeah, we're gonna go smoke weed and try to get booze.
That's how fucking I'll Be Home for Christmas starts. Remember, because Jonathan Taylor Thomas is trying to get his girlfriend to like go on a Hawaiian vacation with him.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're both at boarding school.
Yep. Is that boarding school, or are they at just a weird college?
They're at a weird college where 17-year-olds go to.
Right. It's junior college.
There we go.
The fuck?
See, it all comes back around. All these Christmas movies that we've been talking about so far are all actually the same movie.
So, okay.
And exist in the same universe.
So, they're in the Winslowverse because it's Die Hard.
Yes. Okay. All right. So, if we're drawing a timeline here, if we're drawing a timeline of the Winslowverse, Bad Santa has to come first because that's the origin story for Thurman Merman.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So then, but Die Hard has to happen sometime pretty early on because...
like Die Hard 1.
Yes, because this movie and Die Hard 2 happened at the same time.
So, in that case, Die Hard 1 is at the beginning of the timeline.
Okay? Yeah.
No, of course. It's not. I revised the Winslowverse a little bit.
Okay.
I decided that he did not move to Chicago after the events in Nakatomi. I've decided that the kid he shot was actually Waldo Faldo, and that's why he had to move to L.A.
Of course.
So Family Matters is first.
Waldo Faldo.
Family Matters is first.
Right.
Okay, so Family Matters is OG. Not OG, yes. Just the starting point of the Winslowverse. Yes.
Yeah.
Then there's Die Hard.
Okay.
And then Bad Santa. And then Unaccompanied Minors 2, which is a side story to Die Hard 2. They happen concurrently. They're in the same airport.
No. Unaccompanied Minors
1.
1, which we just watched, okay. Is a side story to Die Hard 2.
Yes, and Unaccompanied Minors 2 is the movie I made up.
Yes.
Okay, so that's not a real movie yet. Call me Louis Black.
He's rolling in the Inside Out money right now. I think he's fine.
Oh, God.
Call me anyway, Louis Black. We haven't talked in a while.
You can talk to me in your Gilbert Gottfried voice.
Okay. So Family Matters, Die Hard, Bad Santa, Unaccompanied Minors, and Die Hard 2 concurrent. Now what? Now where does this go?
So I'll Be Home for Christmas as part of this universe, right?
It's made later, but it's a prequel to Unaccompanied Minors.
How?
Because the boarding school they go to is the same school the rich girl's from.
Right, but in I'll Be Home for Christmas, they're older than in Unaccompanied Minors.
Okay, well, it's
it's in the same universe, but it's not the same people.
It's got to be a sequel.
Let's say a spiritual sequel to Unaccompanied Minors.
Okay, so...
So draw a ghost in between the two of them.
A ghost?
Yeah, it's a spiritual sequel.
I don't know what the symbol for ghost is in flowchart terminology.
It's like the Ghostbusters logo.
Okay. Oh, speaking of which, I realized the thing. Ghostbusters 2 isn't the worst Ghostbusters movie. Casper is.
Oh, my God.
You're right.
Anyway, no.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Anyway, my point that I'm coming back around to that I was going to say a minute ago is that since I'll Be Home for Christmas is part of this timeline, then that also means that Reindeer Games is in this timeline.
Yes.
Because they're in the same universe.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll Be Home for Christmas is Reindeer Games Jr.
With all the fucking, like, Santa murders?
So would they be, are these two movies happening concurrently? Is Jonathan Taylor Thomas's trek across the country happening at the same time?
Okay.
It's happening at the same time as the Santa Claus bank robberies in, like, Michigan in Reindeer Games, right?
Okay. So we're gonna draw.
Yeah.
We're gonna draw a Stargate here.
Okay.
Okay.
This is.
Can we please put this on the website?
Sure.
This is a Stargate because you go into an alternate universe And there's reindeer games.
Okay. Okay. But no,
you need a Santa gate.
I remember, like, when we did
I'll put a Santa hat on the Stargate. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. It's complete.
When we did the I'll Be Home for Christmas episode, I'm pretty sure that we tied those in, and I think that might have been the episode where we had a big Winslowverse breakthrough as well. But well, I can't
considering
remember.
Considering all of the new shit that John has brought to light.
New shit has come to light.
I think the old Winslowverse is gone, and now we have the split timeline theory.
Okay.
Okay. So then what other movies have we watched? I'm drawing blanks here.
A lot.
Merry Frickin' Christmas.
Which...
That's the one that had Clark Duke in it.
Yeah, Clark Duke in it. So I think what happens there is when the girl gets all, like tramped up in this movie, mm-hmm. like, she sends, like, an astral projection copy of herself into I'll Be Home for... into Merry Frickin' Christmas.
Okay.
So okay. How do I draw an astral projection?
Just a picture of Benedict just Cumberbatch.
Just do like some squiggly lines.
Yeah.
It's like
it's radiating lines. Heat off of unaccompanied minors.
Okay. Which and then the neighborhood where the family lives in unaccompanied minors, with all that fucking Santa decorations, there's no way that's not the same neighborhood from Christmas with the Cranks.
True. And they have to have
kind of like how Christmas Vacation and Lethal Weapon 2 take place in the same universe.
No, because Christmas with the Cranks, that was somewhere where it was like cold and snowy, and this neighborhood's in like fucking Southern California or California in general.
Well, climate change. Okay. So the Unaccompanied Minors connects to an Inconvenient Truth.
Oh my God! It's real. This is the real universe.
And then it connects to Christmas with the Cranks. But then, where does Gremlins fit in? This is important.
Gremlins, I believe, takes place... Gremlins has to be like a fantasy version of this universe. It's like, in this universe, Gremlins is like a fairy tale.
Okay, so okay, we're going to draw...
Draw a little fairy.
Draw a little fairy. I'm going to end up drawing...
Draw Navi.
I'm going to draw Navi, yeah, because I can't draw more... Hey, listen... And then there, this is a Mandela-verse, though. This is another like,
oh, like this is like the Berenstain Bears.
No, this is a very important linchpin of the universe. Okay. In the good universe, Gremlins happened. Do you know what happened in the bad universe? What's our other tell me a spooky Christmas story?
Oh,
Christmas
fucking,
shoes?
No.
Krampus.
No. A spooky, happy, scary story.
Oh, fucking Jack Frost.
No, elves. Is that? Oh!
That's right.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So gremlins and elves, that's where the universe diverges. And the bad universe, where elves happened, that's where Jack Frost happened.
Yes. Because the bad vibes from the Nazi experiment is what gave rise to Jack Frost.
What about Krampus?
This entire thing is in Krampus's snow globe.
The Krampus snow globe.
Oh, shit.
It has to be. Of course
it does. Krampus is Tommy Westfall. Because so this is the converging of the Winslowverse and the Westfallverse.
And because Krampus is Tommy Westfall and the Winslowverse and the Westfallverse are one, that means that...
Okay, so what...
Jesus Christ.
But then, so if Gremlins happens...
Like, he just wrote the words Richard Belzer and with like six question marks?
Yeah.
He's the key.
Detective Munch is...
He's the key to unlock...
He's on several cases right now.
He's the key to unlock the Santa Gate?
Oh, yes.
God.
He is the key master. He is Louis Tully.
It's going to make reindeer games happen, though. In our universe.
Powwow. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to bring the fucking powwow safe over.
Okay, so then there has to be... What does the Gremlins universe force to happen, though?
After the Gremlins... Okay, well, obviously, Gremlins 2...
Which we haven't watched.
We haven't covered, and it's not a Christmas movie, so that's fine.
So this is Universe A, and this is Universe.
Whoa.
So we have Universe,
which is behind the Christmas tree door in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Boogie Boogie. equals Krampus. In the elves universe.
Okay, fine.
It has to be from Universe Fighting Mongooses.
The timeline where John McClane kills Hans Gruber. The timeline where John McClane doesn't kill Hans Gruber.
And that's the Sixth Sense?
Wait. No. And that timeline is where Die Hard 3 happens.
It's the real world, because that's what
Much like Batman Returns itself.
Remind me again, where does Unaccompanied Minors take place? Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure.
But where does Lethal Weapon fit in?
Well, it happened again. The gremlins chewed up the back end of our episode, and we're not going to be able to salvage it. So I'm just going to wrap it up here. Basically, you know, what you would have heard was us finally fleshing out the full realized Winslowverse. I'll put a picture of John's final drawing up on the website. You can go check it out. I was trying to throw in sort of the Legend of Zelda 3 timeline theory and then apply it to Die Hard, but then the gremlins, I guess, don't want me doing that. So instead, I think we're just going to end the episode here, cut our losses. We'll be back in a few weeks with another episode. I can tell you that I believe the final score for our crankometer for Unaccompanied Minors came out to 3-1. That's a 3 for the Christmas factor and a 1 for quality. It's fine for kids, but it's really not much of a film, to be perfectly honest. But it is very Christmassy, and we do give it props for that. It's a movie where the saving grace of the holiday is the fact that the kids find all of the airport's old Christmas decorations and put them up and basically force everyone trapped at the airport to enjoy Christmas morning. And Lewis Black shows up in a Santa Claus costume and he gives presents to all the kids, including Arrested Development's Tony Hale, who just happens to be there for some reason. And, you know, that's the movie in a nutshell. So yeah, come on back in a few weeks and we'll have, I can guarantee you, we will have something fun for the dog days of summer, because August is just around the corner and it's going to be hot. And I do know that there are some dog movies that are related to Christmas coming to Netflix here in a couple of weeks. So you've got that to look forward to, as well as us. But until next time, you can find us on the internet. We are at ChristmasCreeps.com. We're on Twitter at ChristmasCreeps. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Skull with the Candy Cane Crossbones. Just search Christmas Creeps and we'll come right up. And if you've got any questions or comments or suggestions for future episodes, you can email those to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. And finally, if you're so inclined, please tell a friend about the show and go to iTunes and give us a star rating so that people know that that the people that do listen to the show actually enjoy it, if you do enjoy it, and I hope you do. But for Christmas Creeps, I am Joseph Wade, and I will see you in the month of August. Good night. Happy Christmas. Bye-bye.